This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C and welcome to The Breakfast Grill. Now on today's Breakfast Grill, we will be having a panel discussion on the much talked about topic on Malaysian wages. Why are wages not rising as fast as the economy? Is Malaysia having a bigger issue of underemployment over unemployment? To help us answer these pressing questions, joining us today is Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of Centre for Market Education, and Zuhair Muhammad Rosli. He's a senior researcher at DM Analytics. A very good morning, gentlemen. Let's ask the question up front. Are Malaysians underpaid? Carmelo.
Well, it depends very well what underpaid means. I think that the situation is a bit complicated. If we look at the numbers, actually, the average salaries in Malaysia over the past decade have risen faster than inflation, or at least at the same pace with inflation. So there is not been really a deterioration of wages when compared with the official rate of inflation. If you exclude 2020, in which wages decreased because of the measure implemented during the pandemic. But the number per se don't speak of a deterioration of salaries or stagnant wages. Obviously, this average is the result of many different situations. So an average is always an average, and the micro reality is much more complicated. Probably what is necessary to do is a revision of the way in which we measure inflation. Probably we should take a look at, revise the basket for inflation. Probably we should look not simply at the topic of wages per se, but I think that the real topic would be social mobility, so scaling up. So I believe that we don't really have an issue of wages stagnant per se, but wages stagnant once you get a job. So it is difficult to scale up within the same position or within the same company. In general, the labor market is not that conducive to social mobility.
Yeah, so you're saying that the opportunities to move up the ladder, right? You can get on the ladder. That's not the problem here. It's whether you move up the ladder. That's the biggest challenge here for many Malaysians. Zuhair, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think I will take a slightly different view from Carmelo. I would say we have wage stagnant. I think before we look at CPI or inflation, we have to understand that index only measures the changes in price. It does not measure the price level. For example, if you are being paid lower than whatever level of cost of living there, then CPI changes by 1.2 or maybe 2 or 3%. It doesn't make any difference because the CPI itself only tells you about changes in price, not the price level itself. So if the price level was already unaffordable, there is no point of us looking at the changes in CPI. Let me share with you a little bit. We have a discussion last week on what should be a minimum wage on, I cannot say the industry, but this one particular sector. And this industry has been making billions of profit despite COVID-19. So one of the arguments that we put in there, we said that, okay, look, let's use a proper mechanism for measurement. Okay, so what we use is we imply the formula used by Ministry of Human Resource. Okay, so it's actually the formula used based on what are the productivity level. Productivity level includes profitability as well as the number of workers. Second factor being taken into account is, of course, inflation. The third factor is poverty line income. The fourth factor is, of course, the unemployment rate. Okay, so all these factors is taken into account into one formula, and we try to come up with a minimum wage. What should be the minimum wage for this particular sector? So what we found is that, okay, so this particular sector, as a result of billions of profit being made, although there is COVID-19, etc., the non-executive workers in this sector should be paid certain amount, which is about 2,500 ringgit. You know what is the argument being said by the upper management level? They said, why don't we use inflation? You know, why don't we use the CPI changes as a benchmark for us to say that, okay, so the wages should increase by this much. And then we ask again, why don't you use inflation for your remuneration? Because the salary at the top keep on increasing without taking into account the inflation. And yet they are asking the workers at the bottom to follow inflation level before we talk about any increment.
So hey, can I just interject there? It's a very interesting debate that we are beginning to start crystallize, right? Which is the basis to how you determine wages, isn't it? Is the determination based on inflation, cost of living, as opposed to the value of the job and what the job entails, isn't it? That's the big challenge here. So is the central problem here not about the cost of living or the issue about inflation, but the fact that actually that we are not putting the right value, or we are discounting the effort put in to reflect the effort put in to determine the wage level, you know? And I just want to understand, you know, when we think about determining the right wages for someone, right, what's the basis going forward? Because I worry about us getting into this hole about cost of living and inflation and all that stuff going through, isn't it?
Yes, I agree 100%. With you, because there is other factor that we should consider. You know, for example, the productivity level. Okay, so productivity level has been increasing much higher than wages. It has been the case since, I think, for the past 10 or 20 years. So we have to take that, because productivity doesn't take into account inflation. I mean, it is very interesting, because the ministry itself has already been using that particular factors that I have explained to you before since year 2007, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, so it has already been there. It's just that I'm not sure what's the arrangement within the ministry, whether they are looking or following that formula or not.
And so then, can I just shift the conversation? And Carmelo, Zuhair talks about productivity, right? Are we seeing improvements in productivity in Malaysia that are commensurate to the wage increases that we expect?
We see increase in productivity, but we don't see it everywhere. So the situation is very variegated according to different industries, according to different levels of work. So the situation is not that uniform as we may think. But I think that the main point here is that there is no single factor determining wages. So wages are not determined by inflation. Wages are not determined by productivity. Wages, as all other prices, are determined by the interaction between supply and demand. So the main issue is eventually a mismatch between supply and demand, and the possibility for the supply to properly bargain with the demand for labor. So in the moment in which you have, in example, overabundance of supply for a certain job, and the demand is below the supply level, so employers are asking less of a certain function than what the market can offer, obviously the price of that kind of function will go down. So we cannot link automatically wages to any index, because wages are determined in a different way. They are not determined in a mathematical way or in a formula. Every attempt to link wages to any kind of formula will eventually drive up unemployment, because will be the attempt to standardize a situation which is not standard and respond to different kind of stimuli and also to different kind of realities. Multinational companies pay in a certain way, GLC pay in a different way, small medium enterprises pay in another different way. So we can't ignore this complexity in front of our eyes and reduce it everything to an index.
So you disagree with the need for a minimum wage, isn't it? Because that's a quantitative structure or a barrier to driving supply and demand, right?
Yeah, I disagree. And I think that also the debate on minimum wage is quite overstated and overinflated, because it's affecting a limited portion of the workforce, and mostly made by unskilled workers and foreign workers. So I think that there is a lot of ideological emphasis on this debate, and is not looking at the reality of the job market, which is characterized instead by much more pressing issues, like I hope we will discuss the entry level for fresh graduates or the possibility for people to grow in their position over time.
To build on this point about supply and the mismatch here, it is a big problem in Malaysia, isn't it? This mismatch. And, you know, for many of us, degree inflation in Malaysia is a big problem. I was just looking at the statistics. 40% of bachelor's degrees have a base salary of 1,001 to 2,000 ringgit per month. We have a problem here, isn't it, of degree inflation, that people are working expecting to be paid more, but the skills that's required in the market is not commensurate to what people are doing in their degrees. Is that correct?
Basically, what I also mentioned in another occasion, when everybody has a degree, the degree has no value. So people will have eventually to accept a job that is not in line with their expectations, or a salary that is not in line with their expectations, even within the job that they desire, because the degree in this moment is not able to communicate to employer anything. The moment in which I have a bunch of candidates in front of me, everybody with the same title, everybody with the same marks and everything, how can I discriminate? How can I discern which candidate is the best? I need to prove it on the field. And therefore, and this is, I tell you this because in many European countries, this is already happening, whereby many fresh graduates will have to work a few years for free to prove themselves and then eventually get up in the ladder. So I hope that Malaysia will not have to reach that that position in which fresh grads, because they are too abundant, have to work for free. And this requires a set of reforms that is much beyond the labor market itself. And I think it calls into question the education system.
And so, do you agree with that? That the bigger concern we have is that in the short term, we talk about the economy, the demand structure just needs a seismic shift. It takes a long time to do it, right? At the same time, we have these bunch of graduates who are totally not prepared for the realities of life. What do we have to do to kind of stem this then?
Okay, let's say we focus on supply and demand. Okay, we do it two ways. Number one, we look at the supply of labor as well as the demand of labor in the market. And secondly, we look at the production structure in the economy. Okay, so what are the available economic structure outside there? Is it for the graduate, or is it for the semi-skilled and the low-skilled workers? Okay, so first, we look at the number of job vacancies available outside there. Okay, so the number of job vacancies available outside there, out of 100 jobs available, only 6 are available for the graduates. So another 94 is available for those who don't have the tertiary education. Okay, that's on the what's available outside there. So who apply for the jobs? Okay, so when we look at that, only 7 out of 100 of the applicants are those who are without tertiary education. And so the rest are all those with tertiary education. So there is serious supply mismatch there. Okay, so are we saying the graduates are not skilled enough? Okay, how do we expect them to be skilled enough if the jobs available outside there also is not available for them? Okay, so it's not for them. The jobs is for those who are with SPM and below. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, what are our production structure right now? Okay, so this production structure, if you look at the investment coming in into Malaysia. Okay, the investment coming into Malaysia are of low quality. This has been the focus of, I think if you look at the Bank Negara report, it has been always been reported like this since 2016, 2017. It has always been there. This problem of low quality investment. If you look at the investment for infrastructure, the share of infrastructure investment out of total investment that came in into Malaysia is increasing. What about machinery and equipment? Okay, so why machinery and equipment? Because these are the jobs that we provide better and higher value added to the economy. Why? Because it involves mostly ICT and technology. The share of this machinery and equipment investment has been decreasing. So the focus is not there to create better and quality economy for our labor market.
Camilo?
On this, I think Zuhair opens a very important point, because indeed we have a polarization of the labor force between people with a degree, okay, that expect to be managers, to be CEO, to be CFO, and etc., and a massive presence of unskilled workers to cover that investments that were just mentioned. Indeed, the structure of production can change only if we create also a diverse availability of jobs. What we need is a secondary education that is able to provide specialized technicians. So with that kind of specialized workers that are ready before tertiary education, you can eventually start to diminish your reliance on unskilled workers. So do it with less labor, but local labor and highly skilled trained labor. And this is the level that we are missing now. Specialized workers, even in accounting or let's say middle level engineering, we can create that kind of professionals with secondary education. Therefore, we avoid to create frustrated expectations and we leave education, higher education, tertiary education only for very top position, but also reforming tertiary education in a way to be really competitive. Because let's be honest, we have obviously an inflation of universities as well in the country, providing degrees. I have been a teacher in college, so I have seen the situation with my eyes. You don't train people for the high level by providing mostly multiple choices exams, which is the way in which things are done. You don't create critical thinkers, people that can take strategic decisions with multiple choices.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, I'm in conversation with Carmelo Felito, CEO of Center for Market Education, and Zuhair Mohamed Rosli, Senior Researcher at DM Analytics, on Malaysia's stagnating wages. When we come back, why are youth bearing the brunt of it? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. On today's panel discussion, we are with Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of Center for Market Education, and Zuhair Mohamed Rosli, Senior Researcher at DM Analytics. Before the break, we talked about the factors determining wages. And what you're saying here is that if we want to fix this mismatch, it really must start with the supply side. The demand will take a long time, right? Because you're seeing that all across Europe, that's going to be a generational shift, or even very hard to do. So focusing on the secondary education side. And I wonder, you know, thinking out loud, then the biggest central problem when we talk about wages and this whole issue of underemployment, we see that most stark, isn't it, among the youth? Because, you know, I was just looking at some data on the pandemic. Like, underemployment was a big problem across all age bands, you know, throughout the pandemic. It went up. But after the pandemic subsided, which is where we are in now, we are seeing actually the older age bands kind of revert back to their pre-pandemic levels of underemployment. But the youth underemployment level remains skyrocketing high, right? It's still going up. Why is it that the youth in this situation here are just so not prepared for the workforce, and that expectations are so mismatched there for youth? Because one would think that, you know, as you talk about the nature of the economy, it requires a bit more agility, a bit more agile. The youth will be a bigger beneficiary, isn't it, Zuhair? Or am I totally getting this wrong?
I don't know how to make sense out of this, because looking at the data, it doesn't make sense. Okay, let's not look at the data first. Okay, let's talk sense. Okay, so for example, are we saying that in the past 20 years, the graduates are prepared? Are we saying now the graduates are not prepared? What about those who are already working in the industry for the past 20 years when they want to enter, let's say, for example, my father, when he wants to enter the job market, he needs to be prepared with all the soft skills and critical thinking and whatnot. Are we saying that? So for me, I still cannot understand this, because if we look at the data, because the job is not there. And by saying that they are being, if we look at the, I think Dr. Camilo also familiar with this survey, is a survey by the Ministry of Higher Education, call it a tracer study. So if you look at the tracer study, they interview all the graduates and they ask, why are you not working? Majority said they are still looking. Only 4% said because they don't want to work. So when we ask them, okay, so why are you still looking? Is it because this job is not suitable for you? Only 2% said because this job is not suitable for them. Okay, so the graduates are willing to take up jobs, but the jobs that are there for that, the jobs for them is not to be a manager or CEO. If you look at the data, they are still professional and they call it associate professional. Okay, so these are the a bunch of jobs that is available, that is supposed to be for the graduates. So for manager and CEO, it's only about 40,000 available outside that.
Really, Carmelo?
I think, first of all, the big difference with the past generations is that the past generations, not only here, but also in other parts of the world, were looking for a job in an economic moment that that was very favorable. So there were jobs for everybody. Malaysia was jumping up very fast, new occasions were created, and therefore that eventual mismatch was less felt. Nowadays, we are in a situation in which the economy is reaching a maturity status, and therefore finding a job is more complicated. Second point, coming back to education and coming back to the middle point. Imagine you are a company that wants to start investing also in machineries, in a highly automated production, but then you don't find the specialized technicians, middle level engineers, and therefore you are forced to recurrent to unskilled labor. So you invest in quantity over quality. On the other side, you have all this mass of people that come out from university that expect eventually a certain level of positions, which they are not suitable. First of all, because they are fresh, and so they cannot have access to that position, and second, because indeed, I think the mindset, or even the soft skills that come out from college are terribly inadequate for the job market. So we don't have people that are ready to take decisions. I mean, obviously, this is generalization, but in general, this is what I can see.
I just want to think out loud, right? Is this situation we are in now, where people are basically taking jobs that are really not in line with what their skill set is, is this a uniquely Malaysian problem? Or has Malaysia got itself into a deeper hole in the past few years? Because I just look at one statistic, skills-related underemployment has increased from 8% in 2017 to 12% end of 2020. So that's a big jump, right? We are seeing more youth taking up jobs which are not related to their skills, and they're taking semi-skilled, unskilled jobs, even though they have the qualifications of skills, right? Is this a uniquely Malaysian problem, or are we seeing this happening all across the world?
It is not unique in Malaysia. And actually, according to the Department of Statistics, skill-related underemployment is 37% in Malaysia, but we have very similar figures in Indonesia or in Vietnam. In Thailand is a bit different because of the big share of informal job market. But if you look at Europe, in particular in Southern Europe, the situation is not too different. And this is the result, mostly, I think, of mass education, which means also deterioration of the level of education. Yeah? So the job pyramid will always be a pyramid. And we have created the illusion over time that everybody should have access. Of course, everybody should have the chance to study and to get a degree, but we also have to be realistic on what a job market, a mature job market, can offer. And again, Malaysia is not unique in this sense, and there are situations I can tell you about my country, Italy, where indeed if you are a fresh graduate and you enter the job market and you're lucky enough to get a salary, probably you get around 1,000 euros to 1,500 as accountant, as a salesperson, in general, as a white collar. But if you become a plumber, you ask 100 euros only to go and see what the problem is. So it's much, much, much more convenient to be a plumber rather than being an accountant. This is because there is a very low availability of plumbers, but there is an oversupply of accountants.
That's a stigma that we in society have to overcome here in Malaysia. We're going to take a short break now. On a special extended breakfast grill this morning, we have Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of Center for Market Education, and Zuhair Muhammad Rosli, Senior Researcher at DM Analytics, in a panel discussion on Malaysian wages. When we come back from the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, government's role and the proposed minimum wage. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to a special extended breakfast grill. We have with us Carmelo Ferlito, CEO of Center for Market Education, and Zuhair Muhammad Rosli, Senior Researcher from DM Analytics, joining us today in a panel discussion on Malaysian wages. Zuhair, what is the government's role here in improving wages in Malaysia?
I think before that, I would like to highlight certain points. When it comes to Malaysia comparing to the rest of the world, we are actually doing better in terms of providing jobs. I mean, the jobs opportunity are outside there, but the problem is the quality of jobs. You look at underemployment problem, our percentage of underemployment is much higher compared to the world average as well as Asia Pacific region.
So is your point that the government's role here is to basically not talk so much about wages, but create quality jobs and employment opportunities? Is that what you feel the government's central focus should be?
No, it should be both. It should be talking about wages. Okay, I give you an example. In the latest budget, they announced this Jamin Kerja Initiative to provide jobs for the graduates as well as the others. Okay, so about 600,000 jobs. Although for me, this is too much because under 12 minutes plan, they only target to have 1 million new jobs created. But that's okay. Let's look at what type of job this Jamin Kerja will offer. Okay, so about 80,000 will be offered at GLC. What are the starting salary that they will offer for the workers at GLCs under this program? 1.5K. This I cannot imagine. How can you still have a thinking to offer this type of wages or this level of wages? Too low, and obviously this will be the graduates. And we've seen that the graduates' wages have been only about 2,000 to 2,005. You know, if you live in KL, that will not suffice. That will not give you wages with a dignity. Okay, so I think all this, it needs to come from political will. Okay, be it from the production structure, of course, that is very important as well. But again, from the legislation point of view, it must be done. Minimum wage, we only affect very little workers. Actually, it's only about 5 to 10 percent of workers probably. But again, this will give you side effect for the upper level wages of the workers.
So Suhey, your frustration is that, look, even the government tries to guarantee and provide these jobs, you find that even those levels are just abhorrently low in view of the cost of living situation they are in.
Yeah. I think if the profits for the employers and the shareholders does not skyrocketing, I would be fine with that.
But the question is, again, do you really need to correlate this to profitability of a company? I mean, again, this is the debate and concentration, isn't it? Shouldn't it be linked more to the value and productivity of the individual as opposed to, you know, this whole story and narrative about someone making a lot of being a billion profits per se?
Productivity is linked to profit. Part of the calculation for productivity is actually profit. So you can measure for one worker how many profits does this worker bring up to the company.
Camilo, do you agree?
Well, again, I guess that is much more complicated than that. Knowing very well also how industrial situations work, I guess the scenario is a bit simplistic and not representative of what actually happened on the field. Of course, every worker is different. There are certain jobs that can be standardized and you can calculate productivity divided by the number of people, but there are other jobs that require strategic decision, assumption of risk, driving the company in the right direction that, you know, in which having a person rather than another makes a difference. And so to polarize the discussion between workers in the sense of blue collars against the top management, I think is a bit of a 19th century contraposition that we should overcome, also because the way in which companies are run is changing. So and secondly, if we come back to the issue of the role of government, whenever the government acts with the so-called policies of full employment or to try to preserve wages, what actually happens is that the government is going to alter the structure of the relative prices, and this is conducive to unemployment in the medium run. So this is not what we want. I think that we should more attentively look at the structural problem of the countries. And I think one, we have spoken a lot, is education. The other one, I want to mention another two that obviously affect wages. One is the structure of our economy, which is too much dependence on two different blocks, which is the GLCs on one side, and the other one, the small and medium enterprises, often family companies. So it seems like there is a lack of private capital for the economy to step up into strategic operations. So how we create the conditions for our private capitalism to step up and not having this dichotomy between small private companies and big government company. And the last problem that is related to this one is that indeed, if we look at the statistics of our GDP is led by consumption and by government spending. We don't have enough private investment. If we don't have investment, we don't create occasion for growth and we don't create occasion for well-paid jobs.
But Carmelo, this is the big problem, isn't it? I think we all know that there's a fundamental issue with this economy, that the structure of the economy is as a consequence of that, we see that reflected in our wages. And that's the biggest challenge. But this is going to take a long time to fix. And that's why there's so much pressure now to kind of do this quick fix of minimum wage. And you are implying that doing this kind of minimum wage increase from 1,002 to 1,005, which is being hotly debated now, could be very destructive for the short-term, long-term of the economy. Is that right, Carmelo?
Yeah, basically, what I claim is that we have to be very careful to determine if there is a replacement point between the worker and a machine. I give you a very simple example. In the area where I stay, I start to go around and eat traditional restaurants, mama shops.
Yeah, those robots.
And I see more and more robots serving my meal.
Yeah.
This is because, of course, the scarcity of labor available in the market. And so my concern is that if we simply, by law, we say everybody, every unskilled worker should move from 1.2 to 1.5 or to 1.6, which has no economic reason because it doesn't exist that value applicable for all companies, we see more robots and less people working. So is this what we want?
So Zuhair, do you understand that your concern that this level from 1,000 to 2,005 could be very distortionary and destructive for the economy?
I think for me, it's very easy. We talk based on data, not based on what we feel or what we think the economic structure is. Because the data is already there. You can do it for each of the sector, industry and subsector. So you can look at that and the number for even among SMEs, it also gives a way for us to put the minimum wage. You know, for because the way we determine, it's not like we sleep tonight and then we dream about, okay, 1,500 and then, okay, tomorrow we post 1,500. No, sure. We also put into the consideration of everything, including inflation and youth unemployment and all other factors that economists like to use. Okay? And yet, given the profitability as well as value added and value created by the companies, it is actually at 1,000. Let me give you the numbers. In 2019, the minimum wage was actually to be at 2019. In 2020, even though all the companies are experiencing losses, etc., still minimum wage actually should be at 1,005 in 2020.
Okay. So hold up, because basically what you're saying, in 2019, we did increase the minimum wage in February from 1,001 to 1,002. Clearly, you're saying that's not enough.
Yes.
And what you're now even saying, that the proposed minimum wage increase from 1,002 to 1,005 is also not enough.
Yes. Okay. Okay, let's look at another data. Okay, I think we all know also about this. The share of wages to the workers. This is macro across all economy. It's only 40%. It's only 37%. Okay, so it has been at that level since 2015, 2010. It does not change much. Hey, this is crazy. Why are we talking about developed countries who are already at that situation? We are in the up middle country. We want to be developed countries, and the share of wages to the workers is half of their GDP. That's number one. Number two, our labor market is not being flooded by graduates. Only one third of our labor force, of working labor force, only one third is the tertiary educated. So we are still moving towards that direction. If we don't correct this current situation when we are in the upper middle income country level, you know, we are doing an injustice to the workers.
You're saying it's a cost correction fundamentally, yes. Right? But Carmelo, isn't this a bit too much? Don't you think this jump would be too destructive and too painful?
I don't believe that any value in itself is disruptive or beneficial, because it doesn't exist a salary that works for all the situations. Even at industry level, it's too big. There are different situations. Each company is different. So let every company decide. There are companies that say, we are ready to raise the wage for our workers. Then there is nobody stopping you from doing that. You want to do that? Just do it. But my concern is that by taking generalized decisions over an issue like that will create more problems than solutions. Again, I want to repeat that this is an overinflated debate, because indeed we are talking about a very small portion of workers, and by keep on talking about this, we keep on delaying decisions on the structural problems that we are not touching at all.
We have so much more to cover on this, but we have to conclude, gentlemen, in today's Breakfast Grill. Carmelo Felito, CEO of Center of Market Education, and Zuhair Muhammad Rosli, Senior Researcher, DM Analytics on Wages in Malaysia. I'm Philip C., BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.